Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to episode 3 of Comedians Talking About Football. This is the first episode that's being recorded during lockdown. Yes, if you're listening to this in the future, you're probably going, oh yeah, I remember the lockdown. Of course, at this moment, we have no idea what's happening with football. The Bundesliga is apparently back on the 9th of May as I'm recording this. EFL and Premier League, we have no idea. And again, if you're listening in the future, you're probably thinking, it's no big deal, Sam, chill out. All they did is cancel the Premier League for 5 years and then handed Liverpool the title anyway. In fact, my guest today is Dan FitzHenry, a comedian, a brilliant MC, known very well in the industry, and he runs Fits of Giggles as well. If you live in the Southwest, no doubt you've been to one of his shows before. He's a Man United fan. He's going to be talking about Manchester United today. And spoiler alert, he really wouldn't care less if Liverpool couldn't play the rest of their games and the whole season ended up null and void. But at this moment, as I said, I'm recording this, we have no idea what is going to happen. We're going to get to the mailbag in a minute. We've just got a question I want to get answered. But how are you filling the void of no football? There's lots of content out there at the moment. Something I'm very excited about is they've put full 90 minutes plus extra time plus penalties of the England versus Argentina round of 16 game from World Cup 1998. And in my opinion, that is the most dramatic game of football ever. Honestly, I would recommend not looking for the highlights. Sit through the whole thing. It's unbelievable. That game has everything. Pretty much the birth of Michael Owen's career, David Beckham's red card, that, you know, he made the big comeback from Argentina conceding two goals within 17, 18 minutes, something like that. The penalties, that's just got everything. Sol Campbell's disallowed goal, honestly, that was probably my first football heartbreak, I think. That was the first football game, the first England loss I still can't get over. Still can't get over it. Anyway, as I said, there's an email I want to answer quickly. This one is from Tom in Exeter. Hello, Tom. And he's asked, Sam, you've made it very apparent in every episode that you are a Reading FC fan. Therefore, will you be speaking to fans of teams such as Oxford and Swindon? Yes, of course I will. Of course I will. Very much welcome the scum onto the podcast. In fact, I'll tell you what, a dream guest would be Ivo Graham. Ivo Graham, of course, is a Swindon fan. Yeah, that'd be great to get him on. I'm not too familiar with any comedians who are Oxford fans, to be honest. But again, very welcome. If you are a comedian and you are an Oxford fan, why not get in touch with me? I'll get you on the podcast. Anyway, look, we've got quite a long episode today because, you know, our Man United fans like to rattle on about the good old days. No, this is a really fun episode to record, actually. And as I said, it's done during lockdown. So, it was great fun to do. Good to catch up with Fitz as well. It's just good to see. I don't know whether you find this at the moment. Just getting on Zoom with people. Just good to see a friendly face. So let's listen to a little bit of that friendly face in action.
So you'll know this if you walk dogs. Inevitably, you meet people when you're walking the dogs. And... You always seem to attract people when you're carrying bags of poo. Yeah, if you haven't got a dog, trust me, it is an awkward scenario. And I met this guy, I love the West Country, I met this guy just a couple of days ago, and we're both just there holding bags of poo, and he looks down and he's like, oh, who's this? And I said, this is Baxter, he's a beagle. He's like, oh, lovely, and who's this? I said, oh, that's Eric, he's a puggle, half pug, half, you know the rest. And I said, oh, so where's your dog? And he looks at me, holding a bag of poo, and he goes, oh, I don't have dogs. Something about the West Country.
This is Dan Fitzhenry talking about Manchester United.
Well, I'm here with yourself, Daniel. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks very much, mate. All things considered, I'm doing all right. Yes.
This, of course, is my first episode of Comedians Talking About Football that's being recorded in lockdown. Usually, me and yourself, we would meet in a lovely location and maybe have a couple of beers together,
For sure.
Watch a few goals before we started. But here we are now. We're both recording from our in-laws, which is something we discussed off air.
Very unusual situation for us both to be in. But yeah, we certainly are. And for the foreseeable, you know, this is kind of how it is. Virtual chats, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, and we were also talking about how, and I think a lot of people are in this boat at the moment, there's been a lot of FIFA going on.
There certainly has, mate, yeah. And I know you mentioned you're a baller with your Pro Evo and your FIFA, which I'm a big fan of.
I've got them both on, mate. You wouldn't think I'm working from home at the moment.
Well, I've got a little girl who's nearly two. And so, unfortunately, it's apparently it's more important to look after her and make sure she's learning and stuff than it is to get my ultimate team up to where it should be in FIFA. But, you know, we've all got our burdens to bear.
It's a shame. I mean, my wife, she's a teacher, and apparently she's been doing things for her kids opposed to being my... I could really do with an assistant manager. But, she, you know, just someone to ask the fourth official why they've added on those extra 2 minutes.
Well,
things
exactly
like that.
Right, yeah.
But she's not...
Pep up the troops when you're shouting at the ref, you know. It's selfish of her, almost.
Right, mate, let's get straight in on this, because it's something we need to talk about straight away. Of course, in this episode, as I've said in the intro, Dan Fitzhenry, you are talking about Manchester United. Let's start from the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in Stockport.
Okay.
So there are roots there. My granddad was a lifelong Man United fan. I'm a lifelong Man United fan, and my children will be lifelong Man United fans. So, yeah, very important to get that one answered straight away.
I'd go for that for not where you're living at the moment. I thought I'd go for where you were born, because I knew there was some northern roots in there somewhere. So where did your love for Man United properly start, would you say? Was it just through the family, or was there a particular team or an era that you remember straight away?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm obviously very lucky, because I'm 34 years old. So the vast majority of my life, I've watched Man United be the most successful team in the land, you know. So when I first started kind of really watching it, was the time where we had the class of 92 kind of coming through, you know, and so therefore I'm very, very lucky, and the situation as it is at the moment, obviously a little bit different, which I'm sure we'll come on to, but it all started as early as I can remember, really. And, you know, I went to Old Trafford very early with both my granddad and my dad, and I played football in the playground at school, and I always just always wanted to be a Man United player, you know, and obviously I'm not, but still a big fan.
Well, I mean, so who were your, like, earliest... So you talk about the class of 92, of course, who came in, and I'd say they really came in kind of to fruition in the late 90s. So who were the kind of the early players you remember? Was it like your Cantonas, your Brian McClairs?
It was McClairs, your Cantonas, your like... Bruces, your Brian McClairs, your Irwins, you know, that was that very much the period, I suppose it was the period just before the class of 92, you know. Gary Pallister, Steve Bruce, that obviously double against Sheffield Wednesday to win us, you know, our first Premier League. That kind of, and it, as I say the words, it's like, oh yeah, I was a glory hunting little S, but it just so happened to coincide that I supported them, and then they started to smash it, basically. And yeah, I think Brian McClair was up there in terms of my favourite players for a very, very long time. I just love that team, you know. Mark Hughes, Paul Ince, Lee Sharp, all of these kind of, to me, like flair players mixed with grit. And it was just, I'm just very lucky to have kind of fallen in love with football at that time, I guess.
Do you remember then the very first Premier League title win?
So I remember it in the sense, not, I don't remember the significance of it, you know. I remember it in the sense of it happening, and I remember my dad and my granddad being over the moon with it, you know. But it was, obviously, you know, I would have been 9-10 years old, so it was happening, but it wasn't, football wasn't quite as big as it is now in my life, you know, or when I was maybe a couple of years older. It was obviously great, but that was just, I would say, when I turned 13, you know, or certainly secondary school is where I really start to remember being passionate about it and crying if we lost, and you know, that's stuck with me for years.
Now, what I'm going to be doing, just to let you know, is I've a very new feature, so I'm going to be hitting you with some facts that you might not know about your own club.
Okay, nice.
And it's very interesting that I've just gone back to this list of facts I have, and it's very exciting, actually, because it involves Stockport.
Right, okay, yeah.
And did you know, normally I was going to save these for about half an hour gone, but this is straight Lovely. Off the bat. Old Trafford holds the record for the lowest attendance for professional football of all time, with only 13 people watching Stockport versus Leicester.
I must confess, I didn't know that, no.
Well, there you go. Stockport were allowed to play, I think, a few games at Old Trafford, and 13 people were in attendance for that game.
Wow. Unlucky for some, but not for that stat or statistician. I mean that's a low amount, isn't it? I'm pretty sure that when we had to play closed doors at LASK Linz, I'm pretty sure there were 13 people there, and that was literally behind closed doors. How bizarre.
There you go. And also, what amazes me is that's not a bad turnout for Stockport, but an awful turnout for Leicester. what happened to Leicester that day?
So what year was that, I wonder?
I mean, you'd think this is during some sort of war or something. If it turns out being like 2002, it's going to be pretty depressing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Depressing slash brilliant.
Oh, no. Oh, here we go. Yeah, it was the 7th of May, 1921.
Okay,
so I'm
nice.
Not sure what was going on that day, but
no,
but no, but not football. No one was interested in football, apparently.
Absolutely not. No, so it's after that's very odd. Well, certainly it's a fact that I didn't know. So thank you for sharing.
There's some more facts to come. One fact you might remember is Man United's highest league win, which came in 1995 versus Ipswich.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. 9-0 and five goals from Andy Cole. Interestingly enough, I don't know if you know, but ManUnited.com, they have been, since the lockdown started, they have been showing kind of reruns, full replays of various games. And I made my in-laws sit through United 8, Arsenal 2, to varying degrees of interest. What they couldn't believe was when, like, Ashley Young had the game of his life in that game.
Yeah.
And I was cheering it here a couple of weeks ago in 2020. And they asked, oh, when was this game played? And I said, oh, 2012. And they couldn't believe that I would care so much and cheer about a goal that had already happened 8 years previous, you know. But football's football, isn't it?
Mate, I wouldn't worry about that. The other day, they showed, they live streamed, I'm a Reading fan, obviously, and they live streamed our very last cup we ever won, which was from 1988, before I was born, a month before I was born. And it was us beating Luton in what is now the Checker Trade Trophy against Luton at Wembley. And they showed the whole game, and
beautiful.
I watched the full 90 minutes. It was it was the highlight of my season.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, it's the highlight of my season as a Reading fan.
Mate, yeah, so you'll have to excuse me because I should have checked this before. But as it stands, how are Reading? Where are Reading in the league?
Oh, I mean, to be honest, it's one of those things where if they void the entire league, it won't really make a difference to us. We're sat about, I think we're about 15th, 16th at the moment.
Okay.
We've spent too much money in the summer, which means that the lack of football and income at the moment is affecting us badly. We're one of those teams, so that's not great. I was going to say that, you know, obviously sort of tying it into Reading, which I like to do with these podcasts. our last, I'd say, most prolific manager was Mr. Yap Stam.
I was literally just about to say, yeah, Yap Stam, of course. So he, when did he leave? Again, please excuse my ignorance.
No, he's fine. He left us 2017-2018, sort of the 2017-18 season, which was a bit of a shame because I think he brought a lot of attention to the club. Yeah, like, yeah. I think Reading's never been a prolific club. It's not an interesting club. I mean, most of the time I match the day, I'm surprised when we were in the Premier League, I'm surprised they even showed our matches. We were always last. But then again, we were always drawing away to Swansea or something. So we'd kind of had these very boring English managers. They'd either sort of been homegrown at Reading, or they were someone like Nigel Adkins who'd sort of been sacked off from Southampton. And then suddenly from nowhere, in comes Yap Stam. It was amazing. But I was going to say that Man United, for a long time, they got a lot of heat as being a kind of a hated team. It's kind of calmed down in the last couple of years because, I suppose, of the lack of success. But I mean, I remember being a youngster, and when you're young, you don't bother about the Championship clubs and the old Division 2s and 3s and 4s or whatever. You watch the Premier League, you watch the match of the day, and the team that I will always be in love with is the treble-winning team of 98-99. Now, you must have been at a good age. I mean, I was about 11 when that happened, so you must have been about sort of 13, 14.
I was born 85, so yeah, I would have been, 13, 14, kind of when that was happening. And I mean, to be honest, my memories of it, and again, I spoke about the games being replayed. They replayed the obviously the 99 final, and they get a fan vote, and you can say, right, what European Cup final do you want? As soon as I saw the choices, I was like, it's going to be 99.
Of course.
And my memories of it, to be honest, are just absolute amazement that it was happening. And particularly, I think obviously the 99 kind of Champions League final is what everyone remembers, because that's obviously what caps it all off. But some of the games just kind of in the run-up to that, where the FA Cup, for example, Giggs's goal. You think about Giggs's goal in any season, in any game, that's a standout moment. And you could almost be forgiven for forgetting that it even happened because of what went on to happen. Think about the fact that we beat Juve, in the semi-final. Yeah. And Scholes obviously missing the final. And
of course,
to have gone through all that and to be 1-0 down in the fashion that we were, I remember actually being a friend of mine at the time, and I wasn't able to go to pubs or anything like that. So we were watching at his house, and none of his family really cared that much about it, if I remember rightly. But when we scored, I was just sat there with my biting my nails, like properly nervous. And then when we scored, and I just went absolutely bananas, they were kind of like, oh, right, yeah, he quite likes his football, doesn't he? This fits. And then when we scored again, and I just started running around it wasn't my house, and I was just running around this house. And I just remember that feeling of absolute delirium. We'd done it. And I'll always remember the commentator, "Can Man United score? They always score." And just that moment, I was like, we can. And we did. And yeah, it's like I say, I was at such a good age for that success, because it's part of me, part of my character to have seen it and lived through it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. And what I loved about that season as well, I mean, I watched a lot of that season and followed Man United at the time. And what always amazed me is the whole season feels like a movie. Do you know what I mean? There's so, and it's like you could make a series out of that. You could make a Netflix series out of that, because there's many storylines going on. You've got this partnership of Dwight York and Andy Cole kind of came in. You had these kind of newer players. I'd say it's the year where the class of 92 really got to their peak. You had the journey of Beckham from his sending off in the 1998 World Cup match against Argentina, and his kind of, it basically arise from the ashes, phoenix from the flames. And it was such an amazing story. And like you were saying as well, it's not just a final. It was the league, and the league came down to the last day. I remember watching that league game against Tottenham, and they were showing the Arsenal game at the same time, and it came down to that. Same with the FA Cup. As you said, there was that, the big rivalry at the time was Manchester United, it was Arsenal, and beating them in the FA Cup with, you talk about the Giggs goal, the Beckham goal was amazing as well. In his first goal, and then the Peter Schmeichel save, And like you were saying as well, with the Juventus game, coming from 2-0 down and beating them 3-2, it was an incredible, incredible season.
I think you've summed it up perfectly. You know, you could make a Netflix series about that and people would watch it, because it is... It's not like we were underdogs, you know, because we were Man United. We had Sir Alex Ferguson, you know. We were not Sir Alex at the time, but we had the ingredients. We had a good team. We had a good, in my humble opinion, you know, we had the passion. We had everything. But you're right. You know, there were so many times during that season where I think any other team would have given up and could have given up. You could have been forgiven for giving up at any of those points. And you mentioned the Giggs goal, but the penalty just before that, and then the way that things totally turned from tiny little seemingly insignificant incidents. And I remember the Champions League final, you know, the one that capped it off. We were terrible for kind of fairly large parts of the first half in that game. And we were very lucky to not concede more. Obviously, they hit the bar, they hit the post. But, you know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And luckily for me and my heart, it was meant to be.
Well, that's the thing. You say you weren't underdogs. And looking back now, I think you can only say that now because they won the treble. And you look at these players and who went, you know, and what they went on to be. You know, obviously, we know then that the careers of the likes of Beckham, Giggs, even, you know, Solskjaer and Scholes all went on to be, you know, some of them world class. But at the time, you'd come off the 97-98 season, you'd won nothing. You know, Arsenal had gone and picked up the FA Cup and the league. And then they were kind of bringing in players like Thierry Henry. I mean, and you'd lost players in that season as well. Like, you know, Cantona had retired, and I think a bit too early for his time. You'd lost players like Gary Pallister, Brian McClair, like
big
we talked
players
about.
In our team,
So, and they were players as well who had won leagues. They'd won FA Cups. Coming in with a young team, it's not quite the whole 1996, you're not going to win anything with kids situation. But when you look at some of the squad, you know, Greening, Jasper Blomqvist. There were some very unambitious signings that summer.
No, you can't argue with that. And, you know, you could argue that, you know, Ronnie Johnson, Henningberg, you know, they're not necessarily names that you would think. They're not like a Maguire. I'm going to say Maguire now, obviously, but they're not like a Maguire or a Virgil van Dijk or, you know, a powerhouse central defender that you think, oh, or a Vidic. You know, you think about Vidic a few years later, obviously.
Amazing player, yeah.
Oh, what a player. I think the fact that we kind of managed to do it with the squad that we had, again, you know, down to the team spirit.
We'll get on to Vidic in a minute, because he's one of my favourite Man United players of all time, because he was heavily influenced by another one of my favourite players of all time.
Nice.
But with the 98-99 season, one of my favourite moments of the whole thing, you've won the treble, it's all confirmed, and there comes the moment to lift the European Cup. And at this point, remember, you know, you'd won it again in 2008. This is something that players or Man United fans hadn't thought about since the 70s, since the days of Bobby Charlton, since the days of George Best. And what I love is you've got these iconic players. Peter Schmeichel lifts it because he was captain for the night. And, you know, and Scholes is there, and Keane's there in their suits, Beckham's there, Sheringham, Dwight York, Andy Cole, these people have made it. And what I love is the second they lift the cup, David May, from nowhere, who I'm honest, don't even know if he played that season, jumps up from the back and leaps on top and holds his hand in the air. And now every iconic picture of that treble-winning squad has got David May at the top of it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I met David May actually not very long ago at a corporate kind of like a corporate sporting thing. And he was sat with Matt Letizia, which was brilliant for me. I was like, oh my God, I'm in absolute heaven here. And I was doing a kind of corporate, so for non-comics it was something that could have been horrendous, but was actually all right. But so I was kind of dressed quite smartly, and both him and Matt Letizia initially thought I was a waiter, which was just soul destroying.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh man. So what was it like meeting David May? I mean, has he ever addressed that? Because I saw him mention it on Soccer AM about he thought, do you know what? I am part of this squad. I'm not going to be remembered. So this is my moment. And he just leapt up
And fair play to him, you know. I mean, you're quite right. He's not a memorable player that you would necessarily associate. But he's he's quite a big guy. He's quite a big northern bloke, and he saw an opportunity and thought, I'm getting involved. But I didn't ask him about that, to be honest. You know, I said obviously I was a United fan. I said I was a big fan of both him and him and Matt Letizia. And I mean, Matt Letizia, obviously that's a whole different conversation, similar to what you had with John. But I didn't mention that. But if I see him again, and you know, potentially that will happen, I'll certainly ask him. He loves his golf. So maybe
So does Matt Letizia, of course. Yeah. Fantastic podcast with him golfing. So have you done a few of these corporate gigs then with footballers?
So I've done a couple. So when I guess for full disclosure, it's not just footballers that are there. So they're kind of corporate events, and they have, you know, former sporting celebrities that mix with the people from the company. And they, some of them go and play golf, and some of them have people who aren't interested in golf. They play a series of kind of like, it's a knockout style games that I compare. And then in the evening we have like a big show. It's like an award show for this business, and I'm there, and they've got obviously celebrities on table. So I've done it for the last 5 years or so. This year hasn't been cancelled yet, but I'm expecting it to be cancelled because it would normally be in June. So but it's not your normal kind of corporate. And
it doesn't sound it.
No, you know, it's not my role there is to kind of co-host and basically just kind of keep the night going. So it's not your kind of stand up and make us laugh for an hour while we eat our dinner and don't really give a shit kind of thing. So I've just sworn as well. Am I allowed to swear? I've heard swearing.
Yeah, you can swear all you want, mate. Yes. Yeah, you're all good. You're all good.
Yeah, so I've done a few of them, and they're a lot of fun. But as I say, the first couple, really, I was probably too nervous to even actually want to speak to them. I just wanted to not fuck it up.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, what were they like then? Were they like nice guys?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Really, obviously, you know, they're at a kind of corporate event, so they are, you know, they're on show, for want of a better phrase, but yeah, they're generally speaking, everyone's really nice. One of the nicest chats I've ever had with someone was with Dermot Gallagher, the referee.
Okay.
And
yeah.
He was just such a nice bloke, and you know, I've the last 3 years that I've done it, him and I have kind of stood there for a little while, and he's been kind enough to say he remembers me and stuff like that, and we just have a Guinness and have a chat. And obviously the other side of it is that everyone who's there who isn't a footballer or former sports star, obviously they're members of this business. So quite clearly, if they're interested, they want to take their time and have a chat with them. But yeah, generally they've all been really nice.
Oh, but that's a good job to do, actually. I've attended some of these nights purely as, you know, an audience, you know, an evening with. They do a few at the Swindon Town Football Club. And one of the best I've seen is... Because sometimes you're right, they come along, they're in the suits, they're corporate, they tell some stories, and they're very professional. Don Goodman was a very good one. You know, he just shared his stories and things like that. One of the most loose I've ever seen was John Barnes.
Okay, nice.
John Barnes turned up. You could see him as we turned up. He was getting a few pints down him. There was a few gin and tonics, I think, on the go. And when it was his turn to speak, it was about 2 hours into the night, and he just let loose on what he got up to in his time. He just told some fantastic stories about Bruce Grobler taking him out, basically saying, "You're not sleeping tonight. We're going out. We're going out. We're going out." And just some fantastic. So these events can be such good fun.
And you want, you know, that's what you want, isn't it? You don't want them to say, "Oh yeah, well we took the team coach at 2:15 and got there at 2:30. And you want them to actually kind of tell you what you don't know, you know. And of course, you and I, Joe Public, we're never going to have heard about those stories with Bruce Grobler. So I actually went to, when I lived in Bath, so I used to live in Bath until a couple of years ago, but Bath City, because they, well, for whatever reason, they had Eric Cantona there. Now, Cantona was and almost definitely will forever be my favourite United player.
Okay.
You know, my dog's called Eric, and
brilliant.
The opportunity to go and see him there was obviously one I had to take. And it was it was so weird to actually see him there and to shake his hand and say, to try not to kind of fangirl all over him. But he was, as you can imagine, he was quite, I don't want to disrespect him, but he was quite odd. You know, the seagull and trawlers and stuff. Mm. It was quite philosophical. But at the same time, you know, just what an opportunity to meet him. It was amazing.
I love Eric Cantona. Again, you know, some of my earliest memories of football in general was just hearing his name. And it's, and like I said to you earlier, I always feel like he retired too soon. It was a tragedy that he was kind of so big and then just nothing. You know, he sort of left at the peak.
Yeah, he did. And I think, you know, obviously the whole Crystal Palace situation, the whole ban, the whole the return, the homecoming, it was written in the stars that it would A, be Liverpool, and that B, of course, he would score. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, when he said that he was going, it was, I suppose that was the first time I can remember as a football fan and as a United fan, first time I can remember being like heartbroken about a player. And obviously as the years have gone on, of course, I've seen loads of players retire, but yeah, that was the first one that made me think, shit, do you know what, it's not going to be like this forever, things are going to change. And yeah, it was gutting, absolutely gutting.
Have you seen the movie Finding Eric?
I have, yeah.
Fantastic. Absolutely amazing. Bizarre, really, but so good.
Yeah, it really is. And actually, do you know what? I've got a feeling that Ken Loach, who wrote that film,
yeah,
I've got a feeling that's why he was in Bath. It was that, yeah. So Ken Loach either part owns, or his friend, I think he part owns Bath City Football Club. So that's why he organised it. And yeah, of course, yeah, it was around the time of Finding Eric. But yeah, what a great film, you know, so weird and so kind of indulgent, but how brilliant. What a great concept to just try and find Eric Cantona. Amazing.
I absolutely amazing, that film. I remember watching it and it being like, right, okay, so there's this guy, kind of has a bit of a hard time. So then he starts talking to a Eric Cantona poster, and then the poster becomes real. Yeah. And I remember there was like a CBBC show about Michael Owen, who was a poster who became real when we were younger. And I just thought, wow, you know, that is that's quite something.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Daniel, it's time to hit you with another emergency fact.
Okay, cool.
Do you know the name of the only Manchester United player to score a hat-trick on his league debut?
Score a hat-trick on his league debut. So I was at Wayne Rooney's debut, but that was Champions League, and he got a hat-trick then. Am I allowed to ask a clue? Am I allowed to ask kind of roughly what era?
You certainly can. To give you an idea, he died at 41 years of age,
right,
in the year 1919.
Oh, okay, cool, good. So right in my wheelhouse, excellent. No, I'm afraid I'm going to have to pass.
His name was Charlie Sagger.
Oh.
And he is the only Man United player in history to score a hat-trick on his debut.
Well, that is a big fact, because you think about all the players that have played, obviously, since then. Yeah, do you know what? I never realised that none of my players in my era had not scored a hat-trick on their league debut. And it was league debut, wasn't it?
That's correct, yeah. League debut. Hit with another emergency fact, which is there was an absolute uproar, and we're keeping with the theme of the 98-99 treble winning season, when a footballer won both the PFA and FWA Player of the Season awards, and they were not a Manchester United player. But do you know who the player was?
They won the PFA Player of the Year
and the FWA.
FWA is in football...
Football Writers.
Football Writers, sorry. I was thinking FAW, Football Association of Wales. So who had a good season in 98-99? Shearer? Is that...
It's not Shearer.
No. I'm going to go for... And you say... So obviously it's not a Man United fan.
No, not United player, no.
No, do you know what? I don't know. I'm stumped. That's upset me that it's not a Man United player.
It was the it was Mr. David Ginola.
Ah, David Ginola, of course. So my brother is a Newcastle fan, so I should have I should have had a stab in the dark at that. We went to in 96 we went to the Charity Shield where we just missed out on signing Shearer. He'd gone to Newcastle for 15 million, which at the time looked like a ludicrous sum of money. And we'd got Ole Solskjaer, of course, for 1.5 million. And anyway, we were there, and obviously, my mum, bless her, took me and my brother, and we got there, and I was absolutely buzzing. I was like, who are you going to support? Thinking he'd definitely support Man United to be with me. And he went, oh, who are they playing? And I said, oh, Newcastle. He went, yeah, I'll support them. And fair play to him. He has supported them ever since that moment, 24 years ago, and stuck with them through thin and thin.
The weirdest things can start you supporting a football team. I don't know if you heard the first episode I did with Jacob Hawley.
Yeah.
He
loved it.
It was his dad. It was a wind-up on his grandparents who were all Chelsea fans.
Yeah.
So his dad thought it'd be a laugh. His dad, not really into football, but thought it'd be a laugh to raise him as an Arsenal fan. And I think when he went to I can't remember the story correctly, but I think he got taken to a match when he was very young, and Arsenal weren't playing in red.
Yeah.
They're playing in their away colours. And Jacob didn't like the colour red because he thought it was too aggressive, which is quite, you know, deep for a 5-year old.
It is very
He supported the other team, who were Arsenal. So he was an Arsenal fan ever since then. So it can take all sorts. It really can. So you were talking then about the Alan Shearer signing. I mean, there's been a few players during, especially like maybe the late 80s and the 90s, who were linked with Man United and it never quite happened. So I know Alan Shearer was linked after Euro 96 to Man United. Yeah. One name that always, I think, is a real shame that they never signed for Manchester United was Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
And there was a big thing there because Ferguson pretty much had the deal done.
So I've heard, and Gazza, I think Gazza is certainly one of the players of a generation. You know, every generation kind of gets one of those superstars, and he was almost unquestionably ours, and I think, or that generation at least. And obviously he played for some great clubs, he scored some incredible goals, and I think I kind of think that if Fergie had got him and been able to influence his off the field antics, let's say, then potentially Gazza could have had a very different career. And I'd like to think that Fergie would have had kind of a fatherly, I'll take you under the wing approach, but also clearly he wouldn't be afraid to give him a bollocking if he needed it as well.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of players, when you look at like the likes of Rooney, who I think were controlled very much in a positive way under Ferguson. And you look at Gascoigne, I mean, even in, he had that injury in 94, then 96, you look at him, Euro 96, still world class.
Yeah,
and 2 years later, he's playing for Middlesbrough. And you just think, had he signed for Man United at the right time, he could have had a very, very different career.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think that if it's kind of seemingly small decisions that can have a massive impact. And, there's few players I think in history, certainly English players, who the vast majority of people would look back on and think, oh, do you know what, if only. And maybe it wouldn't have been Man United, but if he'd signed for anyone or had a different manager, or just not grown up with mates who really loved a pint, then things could have been so different for him. But yeah, I think he would have been a brilliant signing for us for sure.
Going with Alex Ferguson for a minute, I mean, we can't obviously do this podcast without talking about him. And it must have been strange because pretty much your whole life up until he left, all you know of Man United is Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, he ended on a high in the 2012-2013 season, not just because it was the final season that Reading were in the Premier League, but because, of course, he won the title. There's an interesting, there's a great podcast I love called Quickly Kevin, Will He Score?
Oh, I love it.
Really
great.
Good night's football. And they had James Acaster on.
Okay,
and James Acaster, a little bit like what we were talking about earlier, he was a Manchester United fan until they won the treble in 1999, because he said that was the season finale.
Right.
He said, when he tried to get back into football the next year, he thought, well, what are we doing? We've won the treble. We should have We should have going on. Now, of course, there was years of success in Man United. Afterwards, of course, they won the league multiple times afterwards. They won the Champions League in 2008 and FA Cup wins. But there seems to be a lot of talk about how people think he should have retired after that treble winning season. What are your thoughts on that?
As in for Fergie to have retired?
Yeah, they said, you know, I think they think a lot of people feel he should have stepped down then.
Well, I mean, my thoughts are that that is absolutely not what should have happened. You know, I think it's a very interesting kind of point of view. And from James Acaster's perspective, you know, how great is that? Of course, it's not going to get any better than that. And I think from what I know about Fergie, and, you know, I've read his books and, you know, I've read loads of interviews with him and stuff, I think it would probably have been more or less the day after he would have let them have a celebration, and then it would have been like, right, we're planning for next season. Who's not going to be playing? Who's leaving? Who do we need to get in? Because he just had that desire, you know, he had that desire to win, and of course would have wanted to win the Champions League more than he did. And obviously we got lucky, or not got lucky again, but we won it again. But I think if he could still be fit enough and healthy enough to do it, I think he'd want to win a treble again. So, yeah, I'm obviously very pleased that he hadn't for a selfish football fan's, from a selfish football fan's point of view.
Mm.
But I think that when you've got that character and you've got that desire to win, you know, it's just, yeah, brilliant. That was well done, but we'll move on.
Do you think football's changed since Ferguson stepped down? I mean, it seemed to me that the football was going in a very different... I think with the rise of Manchester City, mm-hmm. I think that once they won that title in 2012, I felt like Ferguson felt, right, one more league title and then that's it. But I mean, since then, I mean, with Ferguson, I mean, the Premier League has always had Ferguson up until 2013. And after he left, do you feel like the Premier League has shifted a lot? Not just because, with all respect, Man United's drop in success, but it's changed quite a bit.
I think it has. I think it has an awful lot, you know. I think in terms of the style of play that teams are finding success with, I think there aren't very many people that have ever done what Fergie and Wenger did, i.e. stayed with a club for years and years and years, seen through developments of teams. They've rebuilt teams to go on and compete and to win titles. And like I said, not very many people have done that. And I think that once Fergie and then Wenger left, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the longest tenured manager was Paul Tisdale down at Exeter City. And then he left. And now you're looking at the longest tenured manager. Forgive me, I've not looked into it. But off the top of my head, I think it's about 7 or 8 years in...
I think it's Eddie Howe.
Yeah, in fact, you're right. Yeah, Eddie Howe. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's still... Eddie Howe's done a great job in many ways. Obviously, Bournemouth are still in the Premier League.
Of course,
But I think that once that cycle was broken almost, and, you know, Man United sacked David Moyes, then it was only recently, of course, that his 7-year contract actually expired, which is, you know, it's something that my Liverpool supporting friends reminded me of on numerous occasions throughout. But yeah, I think it has changed, mate. And I think that, you know, the game as a whole has changed. And how do you go into a room full of millionaires when they're 2-0 down at half time and encourage them and motivate them, you know? People, I think for me, one of the biggest signings, the biggest mistakes that United have made as a club was signing Alexis Sanchez, who instantly came in on $500,000 a week. Like, how can you put in someone to a room full of people who, forget the industry, you know, say it's a sales team and you've hired someone new from a different company and they're earning 4-5 times what the rest of the team are, instantly there's a barrier between. And I think that anyone in any form of kind of managerial position in the league at the moment has got a real tough job on their hands trying to motivate millionaires, you know, and people more interested in, God, I sound old, but people more interested in, you know, social media likes and
that's
Jesse
true.
Jesse Lingard is a player who I think had a load of potential for Man United and seems more interested in, you know, Instagram.
I'd also like to remind you that when we had bad times here, the club stood by me All my staff stood by me. The players stood by me. Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened post-Ferguson. So along came David. Was David Moyes given enough time?
No, I don't think so. I think at the time, even I, you know, I was every fan was frustrated because we've been so spoiled with the clubs, the success that we'd had over the years. And I remember at the time when he was sacked, Gary Lineker put out a tweet, I think it was, and said, "You don't want to be the person after Fergie. You want to be the person after Fergie." And what a great point, you know. It was a poison chalice, but I think with David Moyes, how long did it take him at Everton to get them into the position that they were? Years and years. And I mean, personally, I think the biggest mistake that Moyes made was something that you kind of can't blame him for, was that he got rid of all of the backroom staff that had been there. So instead of it kind of being almost a phased changeover from the very first day he went in, and again, you can't blame him for wanting to do that, but there were changes. You know, you lost Mike Phelan, you lost René Mullenstein, and these people who had been there for years and years and years, who could have eased that transition. I think if he looked back, that's probably one of the things that he would probably do differently.
Of course, after that came Van Gaal and then Mourinho, and again, the same question. Were they all given enough time? And you know, you look at like, I suppose, you know, there was that year Mourinho finished second with Man United.
Yeah, yeah.
And you almost look now and think, well, you'd take that now, if you're being fair. And at the time, are we in danger at the moment of kicking Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out?
I think that's a really interesting question. And, you know, football, to go back to your original question of has football changed? It has, because people are impatient and people want success now. And you know, I'm the same as anyone. I hate watching Man United lose, but it's part of football, and unfortunately, it's a part of football that we're seeing a lot more than we used to do. But that's life, and I think Van Gaal is an interesting one. You know, he seemed, I think United fans had quite a lot of faith in him because of his caliber, you know, because of his pedigree. Yeah. He'd won so much previously. He'd obviously managed in some great clubs, but almost from day one, he was very odd, and I don't think he was a great fit for Man United. He seemed to kind of publicly not humiliate players, but he was publicly quite unsupportive of players, and you know, Di Maria was someone who could have been phenomenal for Man United, but wasn't, and never really worked out. And I think part of that has got to be laid at the manager's door. And it's a difficult one, because any manager after Fergie, it's a poison chalice. You know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And so should they have had more time? Probably. Yeah, Moyes in particular, I think, deserved a bit more time, because... But then, you know, football's a results-based business. So if it's not going well and you feel like you've got to change, I mean, that kind of leads on to the ownership of Man United, which is another bloody thing.
We'll get on to the ownership in a minute, because I know that you feel quite passionate about that. I know that for a fact because I'm in a fantasy football league with you, yes. And your username is Glaziers Out.
Yes,
so we'll get on to that in a minute. But I think it is a shame, you know, what we're talking about, because... You're right, that is the way of modern football. I mean, we're probably not going to see a manager in a job for 15, 20 years again, ever again. I mean, you can only see that, of course, where you look at what's happened in the last, say, 5 to 10 years with Man City. You know, they've had managers win them the league have a little bit of a difficult start, and by November they're sacked.
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing happened at Chelsea as well, you know. It's such a shame to see that's how they're treated. And I mean, one thing that's amazing is the biggest change, and I think the frustration I've seen in football recently, and I've discussed this with everyone else who's been on the podcast, is how these days that managers are more coaches than they are managers. I mean, we know that Alex Ferguson made every signing, whereas these days they even say, you know, when they talk to a manager about a signing, they say, don't talk to me, talk to the board. Yeah. And I'm going to quickly, before I get your thoughts on that, hit you with another emergency fact. Do you know the circumstances in which Eric Cantona came to Manchester United?
I ought to, yeah, certainly. So he was he was playing for Leeds.
He was.
And I've got a feeling... Ah, shit. Do you know what? I was discussing this with somebody the other day and now my brain's gone. I'll blame my two-year-old. But it was unusual because wasn't he going to be going somewhere else? And you're going to have to refresh my memory. But I'm going to kick myself, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, it was Howard Wilkinson, the then Leeds manager, called up Manchester United because he was interested in buying Dennis Irwin.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
He wanted to buy Dennis Irwin, and Ferguson basically said he's not for sale. Yeah. And then in the same phone call, said, by the way, that Eric Cantona you've got, would you be interested in selling him for $1 million back in, you know,
92.
Early 90s? Yeah, you know. That's a lot of money. So he went, yeah, all right then. And that's how it done. So it all came from Wilkinson calling up Ferguson about making a signing for Dennis Irwin, which, of course, we know never happened. What do you make of that with now that managers don't seem to have control over who they're bringing into their squad?
I think, you know, the phrase, it was a different time, has probably been used an awful lot in all sorts of walks of life. But yeah, it was a different time, you know. To have a manager now even calling another manager directly, you can't envisage that being the case.
No.
And agents have obviously got their paws in, for want of a better phrase, and I can't blame him. Blimey, if someone had said to me, if I could go back in time and I could make it one different choice, it would be to go into football agency because I'd be an absolute millionaire. But yeah, I think that it is a shame, you know, and I think Fergie was probably one of the last who you could imagine the opposition manager going for a glass of red after the game, you know, whereas now it's all different. And I don't think you could imagine that style of negotiation happening. And how great for it to be almost like an off the cuff. Oh, by the way, while I've got you on the phone and then we signed
someone. While you on the phone, Eric Cantona.
Yeah,
imagine that.
Exactly. We signed someone who turns out to be, one of the greatest players we've ever had for our club.
How to create space and then weave past a couple of defenders. McClare, here's Cantona. He's done it. That is magnificent by Cantona.
Fitz, talk to me about the Glaziers. Just let it out.
So. For a good few years, obviously, it's been all about love United, hate Glazers. And I think the biggest difficulty is that we're looking at other clubs who have had investment. And I hate to say it, but the two that stick in my mind more than any are Man City and Liverpool. And
right.
City have obviously been punished for the... their kind of abuse of the financial fair play. And if you ask most City fans, would you miss one season of the Champions League to have won the leagues that you've won and to have had the billions pumped into your club that you have, they would say, yeah, fuck the Champions League for a season. We're happy with what we've got, you know. And I think that when you see a club being run properly, and the difficulty we've got is that the Glazers, unfortunately, have got a history of taking over sports franchises, as they would call it, sports clubs, and not running it as a club, but running it as a business. And, you know, as business people, they've got this humongous asset in Manchester United. They're able to take money off from the debt that they have and use Man United against that debt. And it just infuriates me and every other Man United fan I know, you know, because it's not how Manchester United should be. We should be competing with, and again, it's very entitled to say we should be competing every season because obviously football's cyclical, and you know, I understand that we've had a huge amount of success, and there's a great deal of pressure actually being the Man United fan on your podcast because, you know, obviously we are a hated bunch and we get that. But yeah, I think the main gripe that most of us will have is just that it does. We want people who care about the club being in charge rather than people who care about money. And that's what it comes down to. And I think, unfortunately, we're kind of hemorrhaging money. We're not in a position where we feel able to compete with, certainly, again, hate it, but, you know, Liverpool and Man City. I'm in a position where I'm cheering the fact that Liverpool might get the season voided and they won't win the league. Don't get me wrong, I would die a happy man if that was to happen. I really, really would. But that's not what it's about. You know, we should be cheering for our own success, or at least wanting that, you know. And yeah, it's a difficult time.
But one reason I've always had a respect for Manchester United is their history, you know, is history and also the individuals who have been part of it. I mean, we've seen some amazing stuff recently from Gary Neville and Ryan Giggs, their hotels and what they're doing for the NHS. How good is that?
It's the mark of the men, you know. And I think that anyone in a privileged position with, you know, lots of money, and in their example, obviously, what they've gone on to do since they left is great. You know, Salford City and the journey that they've been on in that respect is amazing. And I remember that BBC documentary when it was all kind of starting to happen. And I loved it. Just absolutely loved the fact that they were still in the game and that all of them were kind of involved in this project. And, you know, to a certain extent, I'm a little bit excited about what Miami FC will... Into Miami, I think it might be.
Into Miami, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I've got an interest in that because of, obviously, who's in charge of that with Beckham. Mm. But, yeah, I think that's a very interesting point. And obviously there's a debate as we record at the moment. Premiership footballers are being kind of called out to see what they should do with wages. And actually, I said years ago that if I think most Premiership footballers would, I think Juan Mata's doing it, like the 1%. If you could donate a tiny percentage of your salary, then why would you not? And, you know, the difference that could make to the NHS is obviously astronomical, and clearly at a time of need, I think anything people can do to help, they certainly should do.
Now, Fitz, what we normally do here is I ask you, what would you like to see from the club next season? How do you think the rest of the season's going to go? And so now we're in a very, very strange situation at the moment, of course, with the lockdown. We're doing this interview via Zoom. They must be minted at the moment, Zoom.
I think if we'd invested in Zoom a month and a half ago, mate, we would be doing all right,
Co-owning Salford City with those players. No, more into Miami, actually. We'd be over there with Bex. What do you think is going to happen with the Football League? Are we going to complete this season, or are we going to avoid it? Are we going to come back in 9 months' time? Or, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
I think initially when it all kind of got suspended and we were not sure when it was going to come back, I think I hoped in my heart of hearts that it would be cancelled. Season would be voided. Absolute best case scenario is that the Premier League season is voided. The teams that are in the relegation zone don't get relegated, but the teams in the Championship do, because I heard one option was to get the top two from the Championship, West Brom and Leeds, to join the Premier League. There'll be a 22-game season. Therefore, they aren't kind of penalised for having a great season. But then five teams would go down next year. Now, I would be perfectly happy with that. Liverpool wouldn't win the league. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. But I do, as a football fan, I'd love that to happen. And genuinely, when I said I would die a happy man, I will die a happy man if that... Not least of which, because I've got so many friends who I know, they can't wait. 30 years of not winning a title, they can't wait to rub it in my face. And I don't blame them, you know, 25 points clear. They've had a phenomenal season.
Yeah.
As a person, I would feel terrible for Liverpool for the season to be voided. As a football fan, oh my God, it would... unbelievable scenes. However, as time's gone on, you know, I think actually we're at a point where we don't even know when it might be possible to squeeze these games in. You know, we've still got, I think I read today that it would be 56 days required to finish the season. So you're looking at 2 months with more or less no kind of break. Obviously, the hope is that if it was to start again, Liverpool players are rusty because they haven't had the chance to play and they don't get that. I think they only need 6 points, don't they? So Sounds so bitter, but it's years of abuse from my Liverpool supporting chums that's made me this bitter. I couldn't begrudge Liverpool if they did win it because they've been amazing. But even if they were awarded it and the annals of history showed that they'd won the league, but they had a little asterisk next to their name and it said, only played 30 games, 29 games. Yeah. It that would be enough for me, to be honest, because it's not a proper win. You know, so much has happened in the last 9 games of seasons before, you know, Sky Sports, bless. I feel sorry. I wouldn't want to be a Sky Sports or a BBC Sports reporter right now trying to come up with content at this time for the last
I'm not being funny, mate. They're probably going to talk about this.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I've seen them talk about FIFA goals. I've seen them comment on people keeping up his toilet rolls. They have literally given up on everything.
Barrels are being scraped for content.
Oh, yes.
And like I said, I wouldn't want to be them. But I did see a really great article where they showed the things that have happened in the last 9 games of the season. And one example is Nigel Pearson at Leicester a few years ago. They were dead and buried. And then I forget the exact statistics, but they won, I think, 7 out of the last 9. It might have even been 8 out of the last 9 and drew 1. And they had some incredible games against United, against Tottenham. And they were dead and gone. And, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Liverpool could play 9 games and not win 2. Of course, chances are they would, the way they've been playing, but you never know. Mm-hmm. Football's a funny game.
And then Leicester, they sacked Pearson and brought in Ranieri, and it was all downhill from there.
Well, exactly, yeah. What a foolish error that proved to be in history.
Maior espetáculo da terra, futebol e o gol!
Right, Fitz, it's now time, of course. You've come on my podcast. You've dared to say, my name is Dan Fitzhenry and I'm a Man United fan. But, of course, every person who comes on has to pass the sudden death quiz. You get 10 questions. If there's a sudden death, you are out. Now, these quizzes, they are sourced from the most reputable so far. Of course, you might have heard we've had quizzes from the CBBC website.
Of course.
And today's Are You the Ultimate Manchester United quiz comes from thebeano.com.
Oh, one of my favourites. Good.
So we're gonna kick off. And as I said, the rule is with everyone is the same. If you get a question wrong, the whole thing dies. It's dead. It is sudden death.
Pressure
so,
is
Fitz, are you ready to challenge for the Ultimate Man United Beano quiz?
I certainly hope so, yes.
Here we go. First question, nice and easy for you. What is the name of Manchester United's home ground? And there are options. Don't worry, I'm going to give you some options.
Thank you.
Bramall
thank
Lane, you. Ellen Road, Old Trafford or St James's Park?
That would be C, Old Trafford.
Correct.
I was going to come up with some witty response and I thought, I don't want to F this up at the first one.
When David Beckham played for Manchester United, what number did he wear? Was it 26, number 7, number 8 or number 19?
Number 7.
Number 7, correct. Question number 3. Who was the manager before Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Was it Jose Mourinho, Louis van Gaal, David Moyes or Alex Ferguson?
It was Jose Mourinho.
Correct. Question number 4. And you're doing well, by the way. If you get past this one, I think you've beaten Jacob, who got 4 out of 4 in a row then. Who was Manchester United's top goal scorer in the 2018-2019 season? Was it Marcus Rashford, Jan Mata, Anthony Martial or Paul Pogba?
I'm gonna go for I'm gonna do a Jacob Hawley, I know it. I'm gonna go with Rashford, but I think it might have been Martial.
So just to confirm, your answer is for the 18-19 is Martial.
Originally I was going to go Rashford and Martial was my second guess, but now I'm going for Martial.
I'm very sorry to report
it was Rashford.
It was actually Paul Pogba. 13 goals, top league goal scorer. That puts you, I'm afraid,
I'm joint last, aren't I, with Jacob Hawley.
Unfortunately, that was question 4. So I'm afraid, actually, you're bottom of the league.
Bottom
three
of
questions.
The league. Oh, mate. Spettacolo da terra. Football, you go. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Mate. But don't
I
worry.
I love United.
Don't worry. Don't worry, because you don't leave empty-handed. You will be getting a an emergency package in these hard and troubling times, which include the following. We talked a little bit earlier about the, and I'm really glad you gave me this fact, but I hit you with a fact, you hit me with one back. The 9-0 win against Ipswich, and who scored a hat-trick in that game?
Well, Andy Cole got five.
Andy Cole with five goals. Yes. So you'll be getting, from that very season, a 1995 edition of Andy Cole.
Wow.
That
That's
is the
amazing.
Exact Andy Cole from that season. He is
That's
on his
incredible.
Way to you.
Thank you so
and,
much.
And we obviously talked about past glories, and you might already have this, so I do apologise. But of course, Man United last won the season in the 2012-2013 season. So you'll be getting your own shirt from that very season.
Oh, my word.
That is on its way to you. That is the very last shirt that Man United won a league in. That is on its way to you as well, Fitz.
That is so kind of you. Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you. Honestly, that's made my day. That has. Thank you. What a legend.
No worries at all, mate. I'll get your address when we're not recording a podcast. Otherwise, you might get very strange fan mail, or in this case, if we're being honest, hate mail.
Yeah, let's
be honest.
What
with you being a Man United fan. But now, normally at this point, I would say to all my guests, let us know where we can see you next. But I mean, who knows? I mean, it's supposed to be the Bath Comedy Festival this weekend. I'm supposed to be doing a show tomorrow, but it's
yeah,
all gone
man,
bad.
It's the world has gone mad, and yeah, I was supposed to be at the Bath Comedy Festival as well. And what day is it? Yeah, in next week, I had a show there, and who knows when I'll next be performing? When we'll next be performing? But I do host a podcast, if that's all right to.
Yes, of course. Do tell us about it.
Give a shout out. So a comedian, myself, and a musician, my friend, we meet up to discuss the world of comedy and music. And it's called Comusician, or Co-Musician if you write it. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. You know, I'm looking after my little girl, trying to write, trying to get inspiration to do that. And it's very hard. It's very odd times for so many of us in the industry. And, you know, I certainly hope that we can get back to a point where we're gigging again soon, but equally, you know, people are in their homes because there's a invisible virus knocking around. So, you know, quite when people will be up for going to a comedy club again and sitting in a room, who knows? But when we are ready, I will be there for sure. And I know you will too.
Indeed, mate, indeed. And how are you filling the void with no football at the moment?
I'm trying to kind of play FIFA as much as I can, doing my podcast. As mentioned, you know, I've got a little girl running around, so she keeps me fairly busy. And otherwise, just trying to survive. You know, I've got two dogs. I'm in the countryside, so I'm able to take them on long walks. But I just miss it. You know, I've got Soccer Manager on my phone, and I've got obviously FIFA, which is kind of taking up some time, but
we'll have to have a game at some point.
Oh yes,
we'll
mate,
have
I'd love that. Yeah, yeah, for sure. That'd be great. I'm, you know, I just on the subject of FIFA, I got the career mode up and running straight away, and just signed Mbappe, and then my friend got me into FIFA Ultimate Team. So Mbappe, by the way, oh, he would be a dream signing.
I bet that's the thing. I mean, there's the transfer window is still kind of going on. I mean, there's even rumours as we record this today about Alexis Sanchez going to West Ham.
I would love him to go to West Ham. Honestly, I think he's a poison in our club, and I think, you know, there were such high hopes when he joined, but take him. My old man's a big fan of West Ham. You know, there is team. More so than United, which he just took me to because I loved him. But get rid of him. What a lovely way to
fuck him.
To end. Yeah.
Fuck off. Fuck, well, that's Alexis how we're going to end this. Fuck off, Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah.
Someone walked in at that moment.
Yeah,
What are you doing, Dan? Just shouting, fuck off, Alexis Sanchez, down the microphone.
What a great time for my little girl to walk in to say goodnight. Brilliant.
Well, mate, look, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It is, as we said, it is a very strange time at the moment. So thank you for being part of this. I'm so happy that I can carry on doing this podcast during the lockdown.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, I love the podcast, you know, keep it up because it's a great concept and it's a great thing to do. And yeah, you're brilliant. So thank you. And thank you again for my gift. Oh, that's super kind.
Mate, yeah, honestly, thank you so much for coming on. I think we've only gigged together a couple of times.
Yeah, we have. We will again soon, I promise. And
we will again soon, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure, and keep up the good work.
Thank you again to Dan FitzHenry. And when everything is back to normal, make sure you go along to one of his shows if you live in the Southwest. I'm sure he ventures further than that. But yeah, his company is called Fits of Giggles. You can find it on Facebook, and you can find Dan FitzHenry's Facebook page as well. Just search his name. On Twitter, you can find Dan on there too. His username is @TheOriginalFitz. That is FITZ. I should have made that clear, actually, with the Fitz of Giggles thing. But yeah, thanks very much. Great guest to have on. And he was born in Stockport. So we all feel a little bit better about that, don't we? A fan down in the southwest of England. And to all Liverpool fans, if you were affected by this podcast, why not let me know? Do get in touch. You can drop me an email, comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com. You can find us on all the social pages as well. Just search Comedians Talking About Football into Facebook. You'll find us there. Find us on Instagram and Twitter. The handle for both of those is @CTAF_podcast. I should say quickly now that I did say something during that interview that I never followed up on. I was talking about Vidic. And why I like Vidic so much. Now, I always played centre-back when I played football, so I always loved the old-school centre-back. And I forgot to bring it up again with Fitz, because I love that the story goes that when Vidic arrived at Man United, as part of his training, he just used to watch videos of Steve Bruce. And I just think that's fantastic, because Steve Bruce, one of my favourite players of all time. Well, in fact, when he was managing Wigan and they played at Reading, I remember getting his autograph. My mate got me his autograph. Absolutely love Steve Bruce. Fantastic player. Anyway, thanks again to Dan FitzHenry. Do go and find him online. Just do a Google search. You'll find him. Really, really top guy. Really, really nice bloke. My next guest is Graham Coolum, talking about Chelsea. Now, Graham is a very special friend of mine. In fact, he's the first person to give me my paid gig in comedy. And it was my last interview I did for the Comedians Talking About Football podcast before the whole lockdown thing came in. It was literally days before. So, yeah, do keep an eye on that. You can find us in the usual places, as you know. Do subscribe if you can and leave us a review. I'd be really grateful. In the meantime, you guys take care. Keep washing your hands. Keep staying indoors. And who knows, hopefully for the next podcast, we might have some more news about whether football's coming back.
Podcast Network.